shuffle.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill shuffle. Hello everyone and welcome to yet another episode of Kill Shuffle.
Hi.
I'm Donald.
I'm Dylan.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah?
I'm also Dylan. Sorry. Let's do this.
Really?
Yes.
It's so hot in Dublin. I mean, wherever you are, presumably if you're in Europe, you're experiencing a heat wave. It's not quite that bad here, but we're cold creatures.
Oh my sweet, sweet Snoopy. It's the most melty time of the year.
It's July, people.
Even when it's overcast, it's melty.
Sweaty boy summer.
Yeah.
You've been to any gigs recently?
No. Besides Garbage, which is amazing.
Excellent.
Just as good as you want it to be.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah. And it continues to invade my mind space.
I went to see Code Copy the same night you went to see Garbage. Yes. And they were a white boy dance party to cherish. And
I kind of know
love.
Them.
Yeah, no, it's just really, really fun Australian synth pop.
That's good.
We reviewed their most recent album on the
yes.
show. They played a fair chunk from that. They played some.
I can't remember
classics.
It at all.
That's a shame. It is a long time ago, to be fair.
Did I like it? I can't remember.
No, you did. You did. Yeah, you weren't as enthusiastic about it as me, predictably.
I was all right about it.
But you did like it. Yeah, yeah. It was very kind of 80s pop inspired. Mm-hmm. Speaking of all of the albums this week, on the show, we're going to be talking about new albums from Sum 41. The Tupperware Remix Party, or TWRP, twerp if you prefer.
Uh-huh.
The Appleseed Cast and Drab Majesty, as well as a look back, a more recent look back at the 2015 album Slowness by Outfit.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be an interesting conversation. But we are...
A lot of weird band names.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
nowadays.
Yeah. They really are.
Yeah. The Sums.
But the Sums... Well, let's start with some maths and talk about Sum 41. Sum 41 are an interesting band. They're a Canadian band that you will 100% know from their smash hit singles Fat Lip and In Too Deep, which are ingrained in the consciousness of anybody, I would say, sort of from their mid-20s to like mid-30s right now.
Who remotely hung around anybody who liked rock or went on a music channel.
Yeah. That was the time. I mean, Fat Lip and In Too Deep, I'm pretty sure, got widespread radio
just
play. Yeah,
the ideal amount of radio play for
yeah.
a rock band.
Yeah, like. and they're both absolute bangers. And the band started up in 1996, and then their I think their first album, All Killer No Filler, came out in 2001. And this is their seventh release. It's called Order in Decline. And Sum 41. First of all, with Sum 41, I'm kind of a singles guy. Up
Same.
Until
yeah.
Like, as in I know lots of individual tracks off All Killer No Filler and Does This Look Infected.
Yeah.
But I don't know, there's certain album tracks I'm not familiar with as well.
I've kept up.
Okay, you have.
Somewhat.
Because I fell off after Chuck. Chuck for me is the Sum 41 album. I absolutely love it. Yeah. And we might have to do it on the show sometime
yeah.
as a retrospective. But for me, Chuck was the sweet spot because it was when Sum 41 started getting angry and political.
Yeah.
But it was really rough around the edges and it kind of felt like it could fall apart at any moment. And then I don't really even know why. I listened back to a couple of tracks off Underclass Hero and Screaming Bloody Murder and stuff.
I quite like that. It was kind of a little
yeah.
return to form in a way.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't developed a full understanding of how those albums really sound, but I just remember hating the covers and for that reason not even checking them out.
Yeah, and of course yeah. they've gone through quite a tumultuous time.
Well, they have.
Just in general.
I think Derek, the lead singer, had, you know, was pretty much on death's door. He had very, very bad alcoholism and there were some quite distressing pictures that surfaced around 2014, so it was great to see him make a recovery
yeah.
and for the band to return then with their 2016 album. I think it was called 13 Voices.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie to you, that album kind of washed over me like water
uh-huh.
off a duck's back, but
yeah.
it was great just to see that the band were healthy and creating again.
And more metal inclined,
mm.
as if this was a push to do so, as most pop punk bands of the day and emo bands would go to more R&B pop inspired.
No, they have. They certainly
they went the other way.
Gone down that route. Nor did they ever really do the thing Green Day did, which was, or even Blink-182. Actually, to be honest with you, which
or
was kind of go more
Fall Out Boy even.
But Fall Out Boy, it's different. But for Blink and Green Day, they kind of took the more the high road U2 anthemic sort of stadium rock type vibe. You know, especially Blink-182 on Neighborhoods, and then Green Day on kind of 21st Century Breakdown and beyond. Whereas Sum 41 have kind of seemed to have stuck to their guns. It was always...
Somewhat.
They kind of began as this thing where they had like a pastiche of thrash metal, new wave British heavy metal like Iron Maiden, and then your kind of rancid type punk and Black Flag, and then just sort of everything else in the mix. Like, yeah. just massive choruses, a big wash power chords.
A wash of some serious personality, because
yeah,
at least the original lineup of Sum 41 was just great. Mm. Like, I could tell they were really cool people. Like, Cone, I think he's the drummer or the other guitarist,
right?
But he's not with them anymore, I don't think. I know the drummer isn't with them anymore, the original one.
Oh, okay.
So it's weird seeing a slightly different lineup from very, very recognizable people.
Yeah, and music videos that we all know from back in the day.
Huh.
I don't know about the lineup changes. I kind of really only know Derek, the lead singer, so I wasn't aware of that. But in any case, one thing is that they've definitely retained that sound. It's definitely angry Sum 41. It's like post Chuck sort of angry Sum 41, rather than sort of the kind of the fun loving, I don't want to say like slacker, but you know, there was a tongue in cheek, mm-hmm. twinkle in the eye that they had, and that's definitely been replaced with fuck Donald Trump on this album, at least.
Yeah. I think it had to take a back seat, or else it would seem forced.
Absolutely, and they're not in their, you know, early 20s anymore, so it makes sense. Oh. And this is what they care about, mm-hmm. now. So they're on this album, I would say Sum 41 are a just no holds barred political band.
Yeah, that's what I mean, there are waves of kickassery in the fun department.
Oh yeah,
I mean, maybe not feel good fun, but a lot of the highlights of this, I was like, yeah, that's a fucking amazing like download ready.
Mm.
Like, this is such a banger.
Mm.
Then other moments is very, very serious.
Yeah.
It's very, very serious and dour.
Yeah, there are two...
In a Rise Against manner.
Rise Against was a band that definitely came to mind listening
this time
to
this. Around.
Yes.
Quite a bit.
Particularly this time around, yes. Yeah. I think Turning Away, the first track, does... it does showcase the two sides. It's got a quiet, loud dynamic... And it has the typical metal style shredding in one part, and then the more typical pop punk in another part of the song. Big chorus, you can tell that they're angry, they're pissed off, and it does showcase this version of the band really, really well.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Which I think I like when they're doing.
They're very good metal musicians.
They really are. Actually. No, they're that's the thing is they know what this isn't. It's not just surface level. Yes. Parody types, like they really genuinely love heavy metal, and they show that in their music too. And weirdly, I heard quite a bit of Muse on this, and other influences I wasn't expecting, like My Chemical Romance and things.
Oh, I knew the My Chem was probably coming.
Yeah,
they were somewhat in the in that territory in the early 2000s,
or like in Iran, that kind of
screaming bloody murder,
and Unclass Hero. That's kind of actually maybe it was. That I had heard there was more of a rock and roll influence going from there onwards that kind of turned me off. Like, you can definitely hear it on the track, that track, Heads Will Roll. I mean, it has appeared almost like, it's almost Jack White. It's like...
No, that's... Do you remember Emigrate's album?
Emigrate too, absolutely.
Totally that kind of
feel.
It's fried up pretty nicely.
Like that kind of good time rock and roll.
Yeah.
But with the serious subject matter.
I think they do it well.
Or what band, The Damned Things, that released an album recently, kind of definitely cranked up and heavy, but still inspired by, you know, like that bluesy rock and roll.
I like it's I don't love it, but it's surprising, and it does something a little different, and it's a different kind of song
paired with Derek's vocals, which I think on that track are absolutely excellent. That note that he hits on, you know, read my mind, that the way his voice has a lovely grit to it.
It's one of those voices that can pick right up to the gravelly pretty easily,
or at least
the screaming. It can go from either.
He can do everything really, really well. He's proved now that he can, you know, he can kind of sing the ballads, the slower songs, and make them really, really emotionally resonant. But he's also very capable of going like, mm-hmm. fucking hard, and
if you've ever seen them live, he's the kind of vocalist who can just do it totally in his range.
Yeah,
he has no problem. He's not gonna fuck up.
No, He's really, really talented, and it was evident from the beginning, but I think definitely on the, especially on Half Hour of Power, the sort of debut EP or whatever, he's just, he's got a real snotty, snarky kind of twang to his voice that could be seen as off-putting, maybe. That's definitely mellowed out over the years, and now it's just a roaring rock voice.
Yeah, he's really trained it.
Yes, he's definitely trained his voice over the years. It's great. Some other unexpected twists and turns. I think on Out for Blood, there's a almost a sort of synthy feel to the beginning and the middle eight that I would never have associated with Sum 41.
I like that. I like that quite a bit.
Yeah, I think it's cool.
I love the love when it gets really balls to wall metal.
When the
double kick hits in, that's fun.
A Death in the Family is definitely. Indebted to Metallica. There's like a full on Kirk Hammett. So like, you know, that those really shrieking Kirk Hammett solos is one of those.
After Blood is the one I'm thinking about. With the kind of the very slidey metal riff.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
Really heavy.
That's more stomping. That's less
sort
of sixth gear thrash. It's more like a stomp to it, but it's definitely metal inspired, no question about it. There's a lot of variety on this. I think in terms of actual meat and potatoes songwriting, there are like four or five solid bangers on this album. Really excellent songs.
I'll meet you there.
I do think there are moments where it dips a little bit for me. I'm not such a huge fan of the two slower songs, the two ballads. They're kind of four chord wonders.
I never really have.
It kind of reminds me of when Nickelback have two songs. There's like one type of song is like I'm gonna fuck you, and the other song is I'm gonna love you. And like those felt like very much the other type, you know, inspiring, slow, plodding kind of ballads, and that's fine. And he does them well, and they're good, but they're not what I want necessarily to hear from Sum 41.
It's not that they're placed wrong in the album. The album structure is fine.
I could have maybe done with just maybe one of them rather than two.
Yes.
I think that song, I think it's called The People Versus, has everything that makes...
It's probably the Trumpiest song I've heard.
I know a bad man when I see his face. So good. You know that bit where he goes, he's got to go. In my head, for whatever reason, just like... It really sounds like he's going to say, Donald Trump. He doesn't know. That's not the lyric, but it just... That's where I felt like it was going. I wouldn't be surprised if he just drops that in live or something.
You don't need to mention it anymore. Like,
no,
like
yeah, does, yeah.
It's because of that saying.
But yeah, I mean, throughout the album, there's mentions of like Resist, Walls. One of the songs is called 45, which is Donald Trump's the 45th president. The People Versus Donald Trump. Like it's very much fuck Trump. And I think it's given them a new impetus to... it's added fuel to the political fire of what they do.
Yeah, I'm not bashing that at all.
No,
a lot of people are doing it.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, but I think Sum 41 fit in nicely with the people who can do it well. I think
so, and they have.
If not, like a bit already been said, I think it's they needed to.
There's certainly nothing. They're not saying anything new here, it that way. I mean, it's the lyrically, Derek Whibley has never been a poet. He goes straight for the gut with his rhyme schemes and his lyrics. And like, so this isn't political discourse of the highest caliber, but you know, it does what it needs to do. It's punk rock. It's supposed to just appeal to your sort of lizard brain. And it does that pretty well, I think. I still wouldn't think of this as flying with the top tier of what they've done, if I'm being brutally honest. I really enjoy this, but I'm not sure as a whole body of work it's something I'm going to come back to very often.
I would say as a full body of work, it's not my I may like it a bit more than most of the albums I love.
Yeah,
because I love them for the singles. And I was realizing with this I liked it a little more through
for the journey.
Even though I missed the happy-go-lucky angsty punk rock.
Yep.
It was more concise, like less a collection of songs, more like a boom statement.
It does. Yeah, it definitely feels like a statement.
I appreciated that a bit more than albums of yesteryear.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't have enough time to do a full trawl back through the catalog. I only really listened to All Killer No Filler all the way through. But I think I think you're right.
I don't like those albums as much as I thought I did. Mainly the singles I love.
Yeah, they're such strong singles. But yes, I know.
Well, a lot of singles in those albums, so they're not, you know.
Yeah, but I, this is definitely a worthwhile addition to the Sum 41 canon. They're a band that if they ever rocked into Dublin, and I'm not sure they ever have, maybe years ago.
Probably.
But they're not. There's certainly nothing like a staple here. But if they do make it to Dublin on this tour, then no question, I'm going to see them. I think they do something within a scene and a mold that can be very restrictive. I think they do something that is quite unique, yeah, or quite original.
I'm sure they've came here. Like during the Warped Tour, Kerrang tours, or whatever those days used to.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have to look it up on Setlist.fm, one of my favorite websites. You should check it out. But in any case, yes. Order in Decline by Sum 41 is, it's, you know, if you just want a short, sharp jab of punk rock that's a little bit less serious than Rise Against, but like more serious than your average pop punk band, then I think Sum 41 are going to do that for you. And they've never sounded better in terms of production, Derek's voice.
Yes.
They're good songs. They're really, really good songs. Yeah. What's your favorite of them all?
My favorite's probably, I think, Turning Away.
Yeah, it's a really great start.
It's got a
start.
Lot of nice bits.
It's got a really, really great...
a lot of them are cool.
Solo in that, actually. And again, solos, they're not something you hear of very often in this genre. And the solos in this album are excellent.
The lead guitarist is pretty fucking awesome.
Yep. Yeah. My favorite song is The People Versus, second last track.
Sure.
Yep. Okay, so that's Order in Decline by Sum 41. Next up,
I'm giving it a 7.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Sorry. Yeah, yeah.
We do have a format to this show.
Yeah,
and it involves scoring the albums. Yeah. You're giving it a 7.
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't agree more. I'm going to give it a 7 too.
Yeah.
All right.
I give it more parts.
Oh yeah, but that's always the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a 7.
Uh-huh.
Which is not to be sniffed at. It's a good score. Next up is the Tupperware Remix Party, aka Twerp, aka TWRP, from Halifax, Nova Scotia, in Canada.
Canadians from the future.
Canadians from the future. Mm-hmm. Their names are amusing, and I presume made up. Dr. Sung, Hava Hogan, Lord Phobos, and Commander Meowch.
Yes.
Okay, I'm glad I got that right.
Yes.
They wear sort of customized Tupperware on their heads when they perform.
Yeah. They were originally of the busker variety.
Oh, okay.
Of like, you're gonna see them on the streets,
right?
Like,
right.
you're gonna watch them because they are entertaining as all get out.
Right.
But mainly because of the kind of Daft Punk kind of masky kind of alter ego get up.
Yeah.
Except more zany.
Yeah, the Daft Punk comparisons don't stop with the with how they look.
No.
The album is called Return to Wherever. Yes. And the whole thing is go ahead.
It's based on a radio of a land from a different dimension.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
They have a kind of a lore, do they, the band? I didn't read up on this too much.
The last 4 or so albums/EPs would be kind of going into the lady world. mythos, okay. Which is fun.
Is this like if Chromeo had a TV show or something? I'm just trying to think, like, what kind of world would they envision? Is it sort of a sort of primary color, like vaporwave type universe where they live, like all, or like San Junipero from Black Mirror, that type of thing?
It's like, yeah, like they had a really good music video recently for the last album, which kind of encapsulates what they're all about.
Okay,
I think it's kind of the brightly colored Jet Fighter anime style.
That
old middle of the 90s, 80s anime.
Oh, sure.
There's a bit of that in there as well, so they like that too.
Okay.
They come from all corners of style.
Interesting. So the whole album is narrated by a guy called JP Incorporated, who seems to be almost like a Forrest Gump type in the music scene. Like, he's worked with Soundgarden, and he's has a long, long career of collaborations and working on TV and film projects and stuff like that. But anyway, here he is, DJ that introduces you to the his program, and that he'll be playing the album to you. and then he makes appearances throughout the record, which are pretty hysterical.
Yes.
I would say
there's a lot of if you know the voices, there's a lot of cool cameos here. There's Aaron Hansen of Game Grumps.
See, I don't know any of this world at all. So
he is in what's the song? It is. Let me find. I think it's
is it
Under the Sun or no Hidden Potential?
Oh, is he the guy going unleash it.
Yeah, that's
the unlock it.
That's him.
Okay, yeah. There's one song that's very workout video esque, yeah. And there's somebody kind of this guy Aaron,
mm-hmm. Aaron Hansen
chimes in with motivational.
Yeah, and you come to expect this because Tupperware Remix Party or Ninja Sex Party's backing band. I guess the band that now plays the instrumental parts of their music for them as well.
Okay.
So they've joined forces and a lot of cameos ensue.
Right, gotcha.
That's a whole lot of fun because they're perfect for each other.
Okay.
In that realm.
I don't know, again, I'm not familiar with Ninja Sex Party, but if you are a dear listener, then you will probably recognize the parallels.
Yes.
But in terms of the musicality of this album, I think it's sort of definitely owes a lot to sort of 70s and 80s disco and funk.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole ton of Nile Rodgers and Chic on this. I hear like bits of David Bowie, bits of the Bee Gees, more or like Kool and the Gang, Funkadelic and stuff like that. But then also
Mario Kart,
which funnily enough, I wrote down pure Mario Kart and then looked at the title of the song and it's called Typhoon Turnpike.
It's intentionally,
which is Mario intentionally Kart. Yeah. Mario Kart 8. And 8 Deluxe would be the like when Mario Kart got a full band and actual recorded instruments as opposed to synthesizer music. But
it's SNES era brought to life.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Just lashings of slap bass, you know, those kind of huge synthwave synthesizers.
Mm-hmm.
I would say a little bit of what bands like Snarky Puppy and Wolfpack do in terms of like really off-kilter jazzy instrumental music, but and then a little bit of the Chromeo tongue-in-cheek talk box lyrics,
definitely Wolfpack but with the Chromeo tinge to
this
time around, because they've changed quite a bit throughout the days.
Okay.
It used to be more synth based,
right? Well, this has a ton of guitar. There are moments where it almost goes a little bit hair metal at times, like towards the end. I'm not so familiar with that style of music, but like there's definitely sort of a Bon Jovi type chug to the to the guitar.
They like their 80s G's with a very, very intentive manner to not be just that, you know.
If a
song needs that riff, it's gonna have that riff, but it's also gonna have kind of a new age Daft Punk in there as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Random Access Memories era. What were we talking about recently that had a lot of Random Access Memories on it?
Oh.
It was a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. I'll have to look back. But in any case, this... maybe it was Supertramp or something, but I think it might have been. And there's a Kick and Wurlitzer solo on this album too, on Generous Dimensions, which definitely reminded me of the Wurlitzer solo on the Supertramp album we reviewed a few weeks ago. The thing about this is that it's... in, I think, the hands of lesser musicians, it could just be come across as totally unnecessary, because you know they're pulling very liberally from obvious influences, and they are combining like modern technology with old songwriting styles and kind of blending them and stuff.
They are a band still discovering themselves as well.
Yeah, sure.
Like this is finally like they're getting the full length albums with proper like structure and all that,
and almost and very much so what feels like a loose concept just in terms of it being like a radio program, but I think they absolutely have the musical dexterity to pull this off and make it more than the sum of its parts, which is really refreshing. I really it's a sonic joy to listen to this album. The producer seems to only work with this gang of people is called Jim Arsenault. And he only seems to work with Twerp and Ninja Sex Party and a couple of other people. But he's a stunning producer because he has the good sense to have the bass really prominent in the mix. The bass is so good.
It is.
Props to Commander Meowch. Yes. If that is your real name.
If you can bass that good with a mask on, you know you're set for glory.
Yeah, but honestly, really, like with a good set of headphones, this album is a treat to listen to.
It's very dynamic.
Yeah,
at many different points in different ways as well. Like Cosmic Tides is a huge highlight for me.
Yeah,
for a new thing they can kind of do.
Absolutely,
to make it genuinely emotive,
as
opposed to kind of a sexy funk or quirky
sexy funk.
It does, but it. it becomes pretty oddly sincere and movie-like.
Yeah, I think towards the end I was almost getting a whiff of Genesis off it. Mm. It definitely goes into that more expansive, proggy realm.
It explodes and it gets...
Yeah.
It's a new area I like them going.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. definitely. Hidden Potential, we've already discussed. It's, you know, pure jazzercise in the best way.
Yeah, really, jazzercise. Really good.
And I think All Night Forever, the last track, is a highlight. There is very much a twinkle in the eye to a lot of the lyrics and the song titles and everything. You know, I think one of the lines in that song is, "Eternity doesn't seem so long to me, you know, when you're around." And then, you know, "All that forever." It's sort of playing on that ridiculous sloganism of the 80s.
Yeah, that's where the Daft Punk parts really come in.
Yeah.
Is the "everything should be awesome because you should feel awesome."
Yeah.
Mood, which they always have.
Right.
That's what I love about their outright positivity.
Yeah, I get it.
It's a good combo for this kind of music.
Yeah, and actually something that's kind of... Well, sure. Myself and my girlfriend are separated at the moment by the Atlantic Sea, so it's been a weird headspace, and this album was a great kind of distraction, I would say. Like, it's such a sunny, feel-good album, it's impossible not to just enter into their world of
and obviously you can see
good
with,
times.
Yeah, you can see with their album cover.
Yeah.
They're very... what I assume is city pop influenced.
Yeah, I hear a lot of city pop.
You've now been introduced to city pop.
I know the sound of city pop, and I hear a lot of it.
It's
on this.
New York, busy streets, nighttime kind of life.
But as performed by Japanese musicians in the 1980s. Yeah.
Yeah. But this Canadian robots from the future.
Yeah. It's like the influence is coming full circle, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're inspired by an Eastern genre of music that was inspired by the West. So it's weird.
Mm-hmm.
But it works. It works. And I absolutely love the... I think it's the second last appearance of JP Incorporated when he talks about... "And we're looking for caller number 9, who's won a $50 gift card for Stobie's." And he says, "which you could use to buy a bucket of Dunkers or any size soft drink."
I love that so much.
Such a beautifully random line. I adore it.
Yeah. It feels like kind of a LA radio.
Which I think is what they're playing L-A-D-Y. On. It's Lady, but LA... DY Radio. And now back to return to wherever. Yeah. It's really, really good.
So much variety.
It's really solid.
That's the one thing that got me, was like, there is so much variety. You're not sticking to the same kind of song.
Really. No. And there's plenty of variety within the songs. And like,
who expected a Mario Kart kind of song? Honestly, I know the band, and I didn't expect it.
Yeah, well, the fact that they're able to pull that style off so perfectly and still kind of make it their own to a certain extent is really impressive. Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is album of the year material, but it's just a really fun musical nugget.
It's easily top 20 material if it wants
to
be.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, I mean,
there's not enough of this music around.
I really, really enjoy it. I really enjoy it for what it is. So
mm-hmm. It's difficult as well.
You never know.
For the mind that's not used to this kind of Wolfpecky, proggy side of jazz funk, you got to give songs more than one listen, I think.
It didn't
click to me instantly. I needed 3 lessons before I really, really...
Yeah, certain songs did kind of were instantaneous, I think, like All Night Forever. But there's a lot of instrumental tracks on here. Yeah. I think the instrumental tracks are more of a slow burn, but but once you do give it the three, four, five lessons,
they're intricate and they've got little song patterns that you wouldn't pick up on instantly.
As I say, it's worth listening to this album with headphones because you do pick out so many little... sort of, what do you call them? treats.
Yes.
That they bury in the mix, and it's nice. My favorite track, it's actually kind of hard to choose. I think for now it's All Night Forever.
Nice. Mine's Cosmic Tides.
Great stuff.
My final beans on this, favorite of theirs.
All right.
But it is my favorite album of theirs. But it's not my favorite couplet of songs.
Okay.
Because they've released 4 song EPs that I've adored so much. That have insane bass lines. I've showed you one of them before.
Mm.
I think they're going for something different. And they're just straight up doing different stuff, which is good.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. Well, I actually do enjoy this quite a lot, so I think I will dip into their back catalogue and just see what else they have to offer.
And less cameos this time around, actually.
Okay.
Less, like, vocal vocalist cameos. It's just Dr. Sung and instrumental stuff.
Yeah, that doesn't bother me, actually. I was kind of glad to just have the musical palette and then variations within that. Yeah, rather
that is
than...
very important, because they've had loads of astounding cameos as well.
I'm sure they have. Yeah.
Combined with Dr. Sung.
But it's a very short, really, album. You know, as far as an album goes, it's well under 40 minutes. Yeah. So I think it was just important for this particular release for them to just... to kind of keep it concise. Mm-hmm. And they've done that. Yeah. So I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
8.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. So far we're in total agreement. That's TWRP with their album Return to Wherever. Next up, we're going to talk about the Appleseed Cast. So something a little bit different. The Appleseed Cast are they were an emo band from Kansas. Now I'm not quite sure what you'd call them.
No.
But they've been knocking around since 1997, and depending on how you classify their Low Level Owl volumes 1 and 2, it's either their 8th or their 9th album. The couple of times I've listened to Low Level Owl, I did it in one sitting, which is a nearly 2-hour escapade. But you know, your mileage may vary. But in any case, they've been around for a long, long time, over 20 years at this point, and. The Appleseed Cast originally came onto my radar kind of for a funny reason. I went through a serious obsession with 90s emo about four or 5 years. No, it's ongoing to this day. But it was my original like, oh my god, this is the style of music that exists. Yeah. And it's fucking amazing. So what I was doing was I was trawling the internet and every resource that I could find for all of the bands, so I could just put them in one big playlist.
It's like when you're on Spotify and you keep on following the related bands and keep going, right. keep going.
I was on an endless rabbit hole, and the Appleseed Cast came up, but the word seemed to be that it was only their first album that was worth kind of checking out, and that it was like as pure as it got as far as sort of late 90s emo, but then they kind of went off in a different direction. So I checked that album out. It's called The End of the Ring Wars. It's excellent, and it very much is. It sort of hits that spot of like...
It is.
Melodic, angsty, really like strained vocals, like almost sort of half yelled type vocals with loads of saxophone, which is odd for that genre too. Just, it's a really, really good album for what it is. But I did dip a little bit into their later stuff and went, this doesn't fit onto my playlist. This sounds totally different. This is like more like post-rock or something. So I just left it alone. Mm-hmm. And then I saw them, they had an album coming out this year, and I said, I wonder how they're doing. That band with the one album from 1998. Mm-hmm. And here we are with the Fleeting Light of Impermanence.
Yes. And I also gave it a listen as well.
The first one?
The first one, yeah.
What'd you think?
Very good.
Yeah, it's very, very good.
Exactly up my alley and your alley.
It is, but I can hardly think of a band that's undergone a greater transformation than this band.
It was jarring getting to this album from that.
Appleseed Cast is the brainchild of Christopher, God help me, it's either Chrissy or Krisky, but I'll just call him Chris for short. And, you know, he, even vocally, has completely changed in the last sort of 20 years since that first album. I mean, you know, he had a very emotionally wrought, more typical emo voice, and now he definitely sits more in a camp with, I would say, Jesse from Brand New. And that's not the only... And whatever. They sound close. Like them, right? This album does recall Brand New. So let's just get that out of the way. I think it recalls Radiohead quite a bit.
It recalls Radiohead From the Trail of the Dead.
Oh, yes. No, it's by the Trail of the Dead. Yes.
That's the first thing that came to my brain.
That's a brilliant comparison that I completely blanked on. Yeah, you're dead right. It does sound like them. Even at points... The new Baroness album, I think.
Yeah,
like that's this is we're very much into lush, kind of longer song structures, maybe more of a post-rock approach to songwriting, hugely melodic, huge heavy use of synthesizer, but then at the same time there's enough of their heritage in terms of like little emo riffs that come in, and that approach to guitar work that really makes this something different and special, I think.
Yeah, and a sensibility that you'd almost see an instrumental band having.
Yeah, definitely.
The ones we like, the So I Watch From Afar is the quietest.
I would say Mogwai on that track, Asking for the Fire for Medicine. Definitely, I heard quite a bit of Mogwai there.
Yeah,
and other kind of, you know, like explosions in the sky.
Certainly,
yeah. Which is an interesting direction for them to go in, but at the same time, they have not abandoned. Straight up just writing a song with a big chorus.
No,
like Time the Destroyer.
It's there.
Has been stuck in my head. That Destroy It.
Yeah,
excellent.
It's so totally memorable, and they're just making it a little more complex. There's more layers now.
More layers, right? And more variety too, because there's almost really it does remind me of science fiction by Brand New in terms of they have an aesthetic and a style and a feel to the album, but there's loads of variety within that. Like on Reaching the Forest, there's almost this DIY indie punk feel. There's like a that kind of hip swinging rhythm to it. Whereas we say it gets dark and doomy. Collision is surprisingly uplifting. It's almost it's got like that Angels and Airwaves type thing at the start, and it breaks into one of the best emo riffs I've heard in the last few years. You know, the that just kind of plays over and over again. That is so satisfying to me.
That's when it really got to me. Yeah, I like the start, how it went, but then as it got on, I kind of went, it was very interesting, and I don't know where it's going at all.
Yeah,
except it's kind of sad all the way through. That's the only thing I got from it. But I liked it. You know, I'm very, very hesitant about that sometimes.
It's a very sweet sadness. Yeah, it is. For sure, you're right. Definitely. Yeah. I almost got vibes of that Thom Yorke album that we reviewed last week.
Yeah.
Like Anima, particularly, there's a song at The Journey and that kind of has that doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo that definitely sounded like that weird electronic version of Thom Yorke mixed with maybe my Porcupine Tree.
Oh yeah, Porcupine Tree, that's a great call.
Yeah. So it's I almost wonder if there's a story to it too. Because based on the song titles, it's tracks like The Journey, Reaching the Forest, Last Words and Final Celebrations.
Finality. That's what comes to my head. An air of sweet finality. Which is why I was wondering to myself, I was like, oh, it's hard to listen to all the way through.
You think?
Well, like emotionally. For me, I really enjoy that.
Yeah.
But it's tough on the old bittersweet brain.
It can be. Sometimes. It can be. Definitely when it kind of locks into a groove and it kind of almost has that hypnotic effect at times. Yeah, it can be. But
it's pleasant.
I always found it a real quick listen, actually. Yeah, yeah. I was surprised because, as I say, the thing I kind of knew Appleseed Cast for, apart from The Ring Wars, was Low Level Owl, which was when they really, when a lot of people thought they went off the deep end. That was probably where their fan base just went in two different directions. And that's a two-hour experience. So the fact that this is clocks in at just over 40 minutes, even though it is as expansive and as progressive and as sort of post-rock inspired as it is, I was always surprised when it was over. I'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
Back to the start.
Job well done. And it didn't actually overstay its welcome.
No.
No.
I don't think so. Really, it's interesting too, because if you look at the related artists for this band, even though they really only have two, I would say the first two are in that mold of Braid, Mineral, Promise Ring, Sunny Day Real Estate, those are still all of the related artists. So I suppose in a way it's you know, if some of the fans are still around and still expanding their musical palette to include Appleseed Cast in their 2019 form, that's awesome. Because this is definitely an album for a more...
The grown-up emo.
For a more... Yeah.
It will wrench out the emotions you forgot.
With all due respect, because I still absolutely... I love that sort of second wave, that 1996 to 2001 era of emo. I think it's some of the best music that's been written in the last 20 years, but at the same time, this draws from that. This is clearly, it comes from people that have written that before, but it's much more expansive and ambitious in a way.
Yeah, very multicolored.
Yeah, despite the very dull album artwork. I can't decide if I like it or not, to be honest with you.
I don't. My thesis is like an album cover can be fucking anything.
Why would you just have it be text?
Yeah. But then again, Nick Cave's The Skeleton Tree is just kind of green typewriter text. Yeah.
It is like a blank canvas. I'd rather have white text on a black background than an album cover I hate, because I'm so influenced by album covers that I'd rather have one that's just neutral and I can make up my own mind. Yeah. But anyway, that's a really, really small thing. And it's a nice font, so you know.
Yeah.
It's not all bad. Last thing is, I just think there's a really Dead Right, Skeleton Tree cover. On that track, Collision, with the fantastic emo riff, it's made all the better because they do something that's quite difficult to pull off, which is a big tempo shift.
It's totally surprising.
It's quite a slow a metered out but sort of rhythm to it, and then when that riff comes in, it actually speed up the tempo.
Speeds really nicely,
which is tough to do right, and they managed it. But yeah, not too much more to say on this apart from it's really solid. Mm-hmm. I think it's really, and it's a really pleasant surprise from a band that I'm not sure I was ever gonna go back to in a big way, and now I've checked out, and I would suggest you should check out Low Level Owl too, because that's brilliant.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a really, really excellent album. Yeah,
a very clever push in a totally new direction, I think.
Yeah, and very, very nice surprise. What's your favorite track?
Jeez, I think it's Collision.
Collision's so good.
It is.
I think I'll take Time the Destroyer.
Yeah.
I think there's a strings that sort of seep in, like real kind of sighing strings.
I love those
end.
Kind of strings.
Gorgeous. Really, mm-hmm. really, really nice. So it's an 8 out of 10 for me.
It's a 7 for me.
All right. That's The Fleeting Light of Impermanence by the Appleseed Cast. Not cart. I often see it misspelled, which makes sense because you carry apples around in a cart, but it is cast.
Yeah.
All right. And last new release of the week is Drab Majesty and their new album, Something to Do with a Mirror. God help me, I will find out for you now. Modern Mirror is the name of the album. Drab Majesty is the name of the band. I say band, it really began as a solo project. And it's kind of interesting. This is stuff that I only found out today.
Mm-hmm.
This was a band that I came through Spotify Discover.
Yes.
So I actually knew little to nothing about them until I just did a little research today. But Andrew Klinko, who in this band calls himself Deb Demure.
I like the name.
Which, given the style of music, makes 100% sense that he would have an alter ego.
Uh-huh.
He kind of did this.
Is that him on the cover?
I think that's actually him on the cover. Yes,
that's very.
He looks
very,
like a mannequin on the cover.
Aesthetically pleasing.
I adore the cover. It looks like a mannequin in sunglasses standing at a sort of a magazine stand, one of those newsstands that you see.
Yeah.
It's a really lovely album cover. Actually, that's part of why I.
Reminds me of They Live. Actually, have you ever seen that film?
No.
With Roddy Piper, God rest his soul, the wrestler who had to put on glasses in order to see people. Like aliens disguised as people.
Oh,
okay. It reminds me a lot of that.
He definitely has that alien aesthetic. And he was the drummer for Marriages, which was Emma Ruth Rundle's band.
Yeah.
So, and Emma Ruth Rundle, I haven't listened to it yet, but I will. And Emma Ruth Rundle was a featured guest on the first Drab Majesty EP. So it all comes full circle. We really liked On Dark Horses by Emma Ruth Rundle last year. Yeah. So anyway, needless to say, this sounds absolutely nothing like Emma Ruth Rundle or Marriages.
No.
This is... Mona D is the other is sort of the second member of the band. She provides live vocals and keyboards and stuff to back up Deb, who can't do it all by himself. No. So they term this tragic wave. I think that's a really fitting description.
It's been around for a while in different names.
This is to put you in a headspace. I think this is very much inspired by The Cure, New Order. Typo Negative.
More, you got that as well.
Gary Newman, Human League, Eurythmics, Depeche Mode.
Depeche Mode, first and foremost.
Mm-hmm. A little bit of Tears for Fears, a little bit of Soft Cell, and then the more modern kind of dark wave type artists. I think the Black Queen is a band that are drawing from the same well as Drab Majesty, and they've been on tour with them too.
But a different emotion from
maybe.
That well.
Well, yeah, I think this is... Well,
yeah,
I was gonna say I was about to say I think this is either lighter or darker than Black Queen, but I can't decide which.
It is hard to decide.
What did you think of this? Because I chucked this your way with little to no context, so I'm interested to hear what you think.
It came to me at the start feeling very written off as. Yes, of course I would discover this on Spotify in the genre.
Yeah.
For the first one or two songs.
Right.
Then it got really good. really good.
It doesn't have the,
to be frank.
Well, no, I just think the first track is not, I think A Dialogue is not a super strong opener, but
it plods a bit.
I think The Other Side is an absolutely wonderful track, actually.
Yes. I think it's working on getting to a place.
Yeah.
It's a little different from the usual.
Yes.
And around the third song, it does that.
And it's more... This whole album is definitely more guitar-oriented than most of the bands in this. Like, especially the more pure synth bands like Miami Nights 1984 and Kavinsky and stuff like that. The Outrun bands. This is definitely more organic feeling. Even though the drums are all programmed or like 90% programmed, that Depeche Mode guitar really does make a difference, I think.
It does.
And the vocals are so prominent too.
Yeah. You could easily ruin this with the vocals.
Mm.
You could have easily.
But I don't think he doesn't.
No,
he doesn't.
No. Yeah. It's like right up with Depeche Mode when it comes to like memorable hooks and lines.
Yeah.
And just stuff like, he does some really interesting things in Dolls in the Dark and Noise of the Void.
Dark. Noise of the Void is definitely the gothiest track there. You know,
it's the emptiness, emptiness.
Very Peter Steele.
Yeah, Peter Steele. Yeah.
Yeah. I always feel like I think his voice sounds great on this, and it does go to a few different, it's got that booming but he does give it different levels of energy.
It does a little bit more than the even though it's kind of a line of the song.
But he
does more than just that song.
Yeah. Out of sequence, more. He definitely sounds like he's putting on an English accent, which I find amusing and also effective. So
sometimes
fine.
You gotta sing like that to get a certain vowel. Well,
that's it. Where it's even to just have that. I just think that is that sound is so tied to the 80s that sort of Tears for, like Richard from Tears for Fears or whatever, like I don't know what it was, but it's that kind of cherubic baritone voice that, you know, I suppose it was initially, it's not quite Ian Curtis levels, but it's you can hear the echo of that style of singing all the way
it's
through.
It's more synth like you can imagine if you were missing a synth you'd use your voice like this.
Yes,
whereas Ian Curtis is a bit more
well, no, he's
not my cup of tea, as I've gone on the record to say.
You have.
But there is that there here as well,
definitely,
but more New Order.
Other, I guess, little influences in the mix that aren't specifically 80s, I think, especially on like Long Division, and apparently this is a bit more prominent in their earlier work, was things like My Bloody Valentine, Ride, more shoegaze influence.
Yeah, noisy almost.
Kinda,
to an extent.
Like a dream pop type vibe going on, more so than just 80s worship.
Yeah.
But I do think that if this album was less well written, it wouldn't be worth talking about. I just think it's because so many of the songs are sound like they could have been hits.
Yeah, they're very well structured. They've got different, they're a roller coaster in a way.
Yeah.
Like Ellipses, like when the guitar really kicks in at the end and almost gets distorted, I believe.
Yes.
Is that the one? Yeah. I think that's the one. But it just, something I don't really expect with something this kind of.
Yeah.
At a Depeche Mode point for distorted guitarist to really kick in.
Yeah.
Or at least early Depeche Mode.
Well, I think that riff at the start of Ellipses is one of my favorite sort of synthy rock riffs ever. I absolutely love that.
Mm-hmm.
Do 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 ba, ba. I just think it's so good, and it's like crack. That riff lifts my mood every time I hear it. It's so good. It totally is.
Like as much as I really want bands like this to do just something totally out of left field, sometimes you just don't need to really.
No, this one is much more doing the basics really, really,
extremely
really well.
Yeah.
It's not a home run, I don't think, at all.
No, totally.
There are, you know, there, you said like the first track is a little bit of a dip, I think. You know, there's stuff to love in the middle section as well. Like there's stuff I love.
For me, Noise, I think more so.
Dolls in the Dark, Oxytocin, there's bits and pieces that I really, really like.
Yeah.
But I think it's, for me, it's all about the other side, Ellipses, and then Long Division and Out of Sequence, the last two tracks. Those are the four for me.
Sure.
And apart from that, it's just a pleasant, it's a very pleasant 80s inspired sort of synthwave record.
It is. I want a lot with this. Treat yourself.
Treat yourself. It's the live show, apparently, is very, very entertaining. And they
really
have loads of props, and they dress up, and it's just a whole thing.
What kind of props are we talking about?
I don't know. Like, I mean, I haven't looked. I'm guessing like one of those vaporwave Roman statues or something. Like, you know, the busts.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that.
I can imagine something like that, and maybe plants and things like that. It just turned it into like a 1980s office.
Well, I'd imagine like props between like an inflatable palm tree and a cultist's ring of summoning.
Both of those would also fit the aesthetic. Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely
close to that, somewhere in between.
What's your favorite track?
God, no, it's not God, it's it's
Our Lord and Savior.
Fuck, I don't know. I think it's either Dolls in the Dark or Ellipses.
Cool. Yeah. I'll take Long Division then. love that song. I think the one downfall of this album is that the songs are too long. But if the songs weren't this long, it would probably be more like an EP.
See, I don't think the Long Division lyrics stuck with me too much.
Oh, really?
The melody was a bit kind of, okay.
I think it's a great.
Fell
song.
A little short, but yeah,
I like it. I really like it. But the songs are all 5 or 6 minutes, if not 7 or 8, which works well and sort of giving them a hypnotic effect at times. But then at the same time, I'm sometimes like, eh, come on, this is a 3.5 minute pop song. Wrap it up.
Yeah, I did a minor too much.
Yeah, it's 7 out of 10 for me.
God damn. Yes, same.
All right.
It just is.
So it's about, are we on the same page about everything? All right. That's it for new albums this week. Apologies if we seem rushed, but I think we're giving everything its due.
Uh-huh.
And we're just kind of, it's just a shorter show than usual. The albums are actually a little bit shorter than usual, if I'm being honest. And another one that clocks in at around the 40-minute mark is our Time Machine segment. Dylan, you've given me stick for taking you back too far in a time machine. I think you were...
Have I?
You think you were getting travel sickness.
I don't think I've complained.
From all our trips to the 1970s and 80s.
I've never complained. I've just been perpetually confused.
Well, anyway, be confused no more, because we're only going back to 2015. We're only going back 5 years. To talk about a band from Liverpool called Outfit. This album, Slowness, is their second and I really hope not final, but quite possibly final album. Go ahead.
No, I saw that. That was one of the first things I saw on their Spotify and I got slightly disappointed.
Oh, okay. Well, that bodes well.
Yeah.
So how I came across Outfit is a fun... it's a reasonably fun story. Back in 2013, I think roughly a month after the release of their debut album, Performance, they were on tour with Everything Everything, and I saw them on Everything Everything. We're touring Arc at the time, I think, their second album, and I saw Outfit play support. And the thing that really hooked me was there's a song called, I think it's called Two Islands, that's the closer on their first album, and it's got this just really, really catchy, really catchy sort of dancey synth line, and that just hooked me. And I came home, put the album on, and my mind was just pouring out my ear. I loved it so much. It has this really dark, kind of anonymous post-punk feel to it, but then at the same time it's awash in synths, and the singer has this really, really emotive, very tender, hard on sleeve type delivery, and everything about it I really, really liked. But I almost kind of expected them to be the kind of band that would make one album and then never again.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't seem to gain the kind of traction that you would want them to. And they didn't seem to have their foot in any one camp or the other enough that they would ever break into the mainstream. You know, like, it was the kind of sound that would certainly appeal to around sort of 100,000, 200,000 people, which seems mm-hmm. to be about the amount of fans they wound up with. But maybe not the sort of million plus that you need in order to make a career out of it. So long story short, anyway, loved Performance, and then out of nowhere drops Slowness. And I, you know, come to read and come to find out that the band have basically moved to different countries at this point.
Okay.
I know Andrew, the singer, was living in New York, and I think the other members, some of them were in England, maybe different parts, some of them were in Europe. This album was put together over the course of a few years through trips back home and stuff being sent and organized over email. And I think, kind of like the Redneck Manifesto album, it's a little bit of a miracle album.
Yeah.
Tough to put together albums when you're not in the same, sometimes not on the same continent. But what this album does that Performance didn't was this just totally expands the sound and amps up the psychedelic elements, the progressive elements. This is a piano album, first and foremost.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm at. So I was really in two minds as to which album to bring to the show. Performance, which is like, you know, the opening shot, the kind of thing that hooked me, or Slowness, which is the album I never thought I'd get and the one that really, really impressed me as to how the band evolved. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
This was one that I just sort of came up with, and I was like, yeah, I'd love to know what Dylan thinks of Outfit. So
yeah,
I'd love to know what you think of it.
I was blown away by how interesting this is.
Mm.
In terms of just how odd they are with relatively common kind of song structures.
Yeah.
How they really spice it up with things that aren't just a piano.
Yeah.
The amount of
yeah.
things in this that will surprise your ears, whether it be synths or just
or like odd little things that sound like a playground full of children played on a Moog or something like this. Especially in that second track, there's so many odd, haunting sound effects that just spiral around. Yeah,
things you think you're familiar with coming from entirely different sonic places.
Yep.
And in a very kind of modal sense.
Mm.
I really got that.
There's almost seems to be no rules apart from just does it sound good to where they take songs from a chord perspective.
Yeah.
And I find that really satisfying to me because it surprises you and then you go, oh shit, it actually works. That works.
Yeah, no, it's really special. It's the kind of stuff I love from a lot of composers.
Mm.
Even for like TV and animation, like Yoko Kanno.
Okay.
She's done stuff on Ghost in the Shell.
Mm.
Really airy, floaty, modal stuff.
Yeah.
That's kind of serious, but also mysterious.
Mm, yeah.
And playful all at once. This gets that.
Yeah, I think this owes as much to sort of neoclassical composers that we've talked about, like Olaf Arnold and Federico Albanese and stuff, as it does to like post-punk or Radiohead or sort of late 2000s indie or David Bowie or Pink Floyd. I mean, it's kind of wild to think that there's an album that can kind of blend all of those things and still sound, you know, still have something of its own and also sound cohesive. But yeah. I think this does.
Yeah.
And apparently when they were writing it, there's just a little bit of background, which I only found out about recently, but apparently the whole theme of this album is about how when you're kept apart from your partner or whatever, your other half for a long, long time, because I think Andrew's job necessitated that he would be away from his wife for like months at a time, how it can almost feel like time just slows, goes slower and slower and slower, even though you maybe want to go faster.
That applies for many things, like waiting for something that's in the future, far off, and
I think he said there was a book he read called Slowness by, I think it was a Chinese author, where they basically compares the slowness of longing and kind of missing somebody to the feeling of time is speeding up when you want to forget something that's happened in the past, or you want to run away from something.
It's a concept that's exclusively for grown-ups or adults.
Oh my god, yes.
I remember there was a study of somebody put like kids in a room and then adults in a room and asked each group to like put their hand up when they thought a minute was over.
Oh really?
And adults did it a lot faster.
Oh, I believe.
Really? That's funny. So time flew faster in a weird way.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, this is,
but it's just people perceive time differently.
I'm sorry to be dropping so many albums that kind of put you in a state of existential dread, but this album definitely does for me.
Yeah, it's close to the other album we talked
about. Appleseedcast.
Close to that emotion-wise.
Yeah.
A little more uplifting, I think.
It can be. Yeah.
A bit more optimistic.
Definitely.
But
I do think it still has the most sort of anxiety-inducing happy birthday song ever written. That song, Happy Birthday, is so... so many emotions going on in one song. Because it's got this beautiful, sort of almost at points, like almost kind of Pixar-sounding piano. And then it just drops you right into an industrial soup at the end. And somehow also makes you think about birthdays, which is a weird
feeling. It was very weird.
In a good way. I think it's really, for me, this album, I love a good opening. I love when the first kind of sort of minute of an album can really hook you. And I think the opening for New Era is so strong.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the vocals?
I absolutely adore Andrew's voice.
Yeah.
I think he's got a real knack for writing a lyric that is... universally applicable while also being personal. And then I think his voice is gorgeous because he kind of flits between a kind of a warm, lush baritone and then a really tender falsetto as well. And how do you feel about it? I know you can be a bit hit or miss on these people with English accents reason.
I like the baritone a bit more.
Okay, yeah.
I like the baritone side a bit more.
Okay.
The rest, I could do without.
Okay.
It's not that I'd wish it was an instrument or anything. And he pulls it off well. It's not my kind of voice.
Yeah, no, I kind of figured that. But I think even if you don't, I absolutely adore his voice.
Some of the songs that I really fucking enjoy have that high register.
Yeah.
Voice. Some of the later songs, like Genderless.
Genderless is wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Genesis is absolutely wonderful. I think Framed, I would imagine you quite enjoy that. I love that song.
Yeah,
it really reminds me of...
It really grows.
It's like it sounds like a five-star hotel in Tokyo or something, I think. Like the piano that kind of comes in.
The Lost in Translation.
Very Lost. Hotel. That's exactly what I was thinking of. Lost in Translation.
Might visit that, actually.
You should. That song is absolutely gorgeous. And then it kind of slips into almost Frankie Goes to Hollywood, another Liverpool band, by the way.
Yes.
And during the chorus, there's a full-on pop banger on this album in Smart Thing. And that actually, at the moment, is their number one song on Spotify. But
I can believe that.
That song recalls sort of the Pet Shop Boys, New Order. It's upbeat, it's dancey, it's got like this four to the floor kind of drum, lovely snaky bass line. I think all throughout
a lot of
Chris Hutchinson's bass lines just delight the senses. There's so much work going on in the bass.
Groovy orchestral arrangements, but not an orchestra. It's fun.
It's like the way I described everything is disco Radiohead. I would not go as far with Outfit. Yeah. I think there's just they're more like, I actually don't know what I would attach to Radiohead to describe these guys, but there's definitely a little bit of that there.
Well, it's not hopelessly bleak.
No, it's
Radiohead
not.
Isn't either, nowadays at least.
No, but yeah, I agree. It's a little bit more uplifting. It's very, very lush, and maybe there's more going on at any given moment. But I definitely think there's more activity in the drum and bass, in terms of pop drum and bass in this album than... Mm-hmm. And there's, even if you go back to the first album, that rhythm section is even more kind of dancey, I would say. Mm-hmm. Like they were likened to Hot Chip in the early days, who weren't a band that ever set my world on fire, but you can actually hear that they're like a classier Hot Chip, I think.
Yeah.
Back in the day. Psychedelic prog indie was the best I could come up with as far as a genre.
There was an album you liked last year that... You that are doing top 20.
Yeah,
that remind me a lot of this.
Really,
the singing. You might know the band already before I
might. I'll have to have a little look back through my top 20 albums now to try and figure out what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Might it have been? It was hardly Shy Boys.
Shy Boys.
Was it?
Yeah, the vocals, the higher register vocals.
Yeah. No, actually, now that you mention it, they were kind of an American version. Now that the music was much more Beach Boys than this is. I mean, it was a lot more. It was a lot simpler.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can hear what you mean. Yeah. As far as the vocals are concerned. Yeah.
This is not a shoegazy or of a mumblecore effort for me.
I don't know, like, those aren't words I would associate with. But I know. But it isn't shoegazy or mumblecore.
No. It's very 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 extroverted.
Yeah.
In its approach at what it's trying to tackle.
Yeah.
Which is usually quite a kind of introverted. Expression.
Yeah.
I guess.
The drummer described their first album, and actually, sorry, he's also the producer, so multi-talented dude. Awesome. David. Oh, actually, I think it was... Sorry, I don't get my facts wrong. David is the drummer and the producer, that is true. But I think it was Tom, the guy that programs most of the synthesizers, that described the band as Nightbus music. Like, as in, the music is too... It's too sad and introspective for the dance floor, but maybe you could listen to it on the Nightbus home while you're regretting everything you did.
Dance on the bus.
But I think that more describes the first album. This album is much more of a lying in your bed, like, in the middle of the night. It's definitely a night album, headphones on. It's very introspective.
I listened to it on a rainy day walking, and it was
totally accurate. Appropriate for that too. Mm-hmm. Totally appropriate for that too. It's not an album that I go back to often, but when I do, I always have a really nice
time. I can imagine it's hard too. But it's complex enough and modal enough for me to not be totally depressed.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's, you know? Yeah, like there's so many moments of just genuine beauty. Like, I think that there's a trumpet that comes in for maybe 20 seconds at the end of Boy, and it's just lush. So gorgeous. It's like
such
like
a lush album.
Yeah, it's like when the trumpet comes in at Kids from Kibble by Biffy. It's just...
It's totally exonified by the fucking album cover.
Yeah, which I can't really decide what it is. It's looks
a bug.
Like...
Is it a bug? Some kind of a caterpillar or something gooey.
I always thought it was some sort of multicolored rocks under some water, but yeah, it makes more sense that it's probably a bug.
Maybe. Yeah.
Looks... Oh, like a a larva of some...
Yeah, it looks like a larva there in the corner.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, it's a weird looking album cover. Actually, funny enough, if you quickly pull up the album cover of Performance, is one of my favorite album covers of all time. It's this weird industrial box which I presume is somewhere in Liverpool, and it's so evocative of nothing. I love it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's lovely.
It's really nice, right?
It is. It reminds me of German architecture.
Yes, it's a really, really stark piece of
Museum Island does some stuff in Berlin like that.
Yeah. Brutalist architecture. Yeah. But yeah, so I'm really glad this struck a chord for you.
It totally did. The album cover caught me instantly.
I think everybody owes it to themselves. This is a band that I think a band that really could have and should have done bigger and better things.
Oh, I wish this band was more consistent, because I always wonder now what.
Yeah,
what,
they describe themselves as being in deep freeze on their Twitter, which is to say, I mean, it's not like they've had a falling out. They're all, I think they all, most of them, four of them went to school together. Two of them are brothers, the singer and the guitarist are brothers. There's really no reason except for life sort of happening that there hasn't been a third. But it's only been 5 years, or 4 years, I should say, since 2015. So it's only now veering into the very long gap between albums territory.
Yeah, they've got the tool to Rammstein ratio, I call it. they have 30 days anyway to catch up before the Tool album comes out.
Okay. I don't think we're going to get a new album in the next 30 days.
August 30th.
Oh, no, I know we'll get a new Tool album. I don't think we're going to get a new Outfit album. All right. Well, I'm very, very thankful to everything for taking these guys out on tour.
Oh, yes. That totally makes sense.
It does, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. When you listen to it? Yeah. It's a totally different vibe than everything, but definitely sits in the same genre. I love this. I really, really, really love this. And I think it's one of these albums that you can talk about it as much as you want, but until you actually listen to it, that opening of New Air when the synths are, or that really, really chopped up, gets me so pumped up, and that's, you're just in then. You're just in for the whole 40 minutes. Just
weird, creative, glitchy.
Yeah.
You didn't expect that at all.
Yeah.
Considering what most of the band does all the way through.
It's a perfect balance of sort of musically ambitious and challenging and strange, with enough familiar kind of groove and melody and choruses and stuff like that to kind of make it all work and hang together. And they're a great band, and I really hope they kind of come back.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just an absolute blueprint to do creative music, this album.
Yeah.
Like, all bands should aspire to do something like this.
Yeah. Check out the first one. Just give it a spin. It's beautiful. Or if not, just the first and the last track, because they're like two all-time great songs.
Sure.
Okay, what is your favorite song from this album?
Fuck. Slowness
is excellent. Yeah, Slowness is really, really good. I think, oh,
but just, then Framed and Genderless are,
yeah, that's what I was gonna say, just they purely wrap it up. Because of the I think just it's, I just think it's one of those moments where I always knock my headphones up at least three or four notches, is the very, you know, the very, very end of Swam Out, where it sort of evolves into this off-kilter synth rock sort of attack.
Yeah.
Just for the last, mm-hmm. I absolutely adore that. And I think that kind of elevates that song to my favorite Swam Out, the last track.
Yeah, totally.
It's just one of those things, you know when a part of a song is so satisfying you never want it to end. So it like, it kind of goes and goes, and then it takes a break, and then it comes back, and it's so satisfying. So yeah, that's Slowness by Outfit from Liverpool. Check them out. And guys, if you're listening, please come back. We miss you.
Yeah.
We hope you come back too when we do our final show. We'll see. I'm going away on holiday.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna take a sabbatical for a few weeks.
Uh-huh.
So the next show may be our last one for a little while. But
so
we'll see.
We'll have to do something for the Tool album. We'll have to do some kind of contact for the Tool album. Whether it's like a Facebook Messenger call,
okay,
recorded.
We'll see. I'm gonna be up to my ears on holiday stuff, but needless to say, we'll be covering the Tool album, and to be honest with you, having an extra couple of weeks to digest it might not be a bad thing.
Yeah.
So we'll see, but that's all for off mic. In the meantime, thank you so much for joining us as usual. If you have a suggestion of an album you'd like us to cover, get in touch with us. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. You can follow our Spotify playlist on Spotify, or you can just follow the show.
Yeah.
If you somehow manage to find us without using a podcast app, I don't know how that would have happened. You can go to the website, I guess.
Yeah.
But do take care of yourself, and we will talk to you very, very soon.
Yes. Bye.
Bye-bye.